You know those early days of relationship when everything feels magical and you can't stop thinking about them? That intense high isn't just romance. It's your brain chemistry hijacking your better judgment. Today, we're diving into the science of why you overlook red flags, what's really happening in your brain, and how to spot the warning signs before you get too deep. Love is blind, and it's time to understand how this affects your decision-making. Whether you're dating or reflecting on past choices, this is your guide to taking the blindfold off, lovingly, of course. So stay tuned. Welcome to the Relationships Made Easy podcast, where I give you the exact steps to create connection, joy, and ease in all your relationships, whether it's with your partner, your family, your friends, or most importantly, yourself. I'm Dr. Abby Metcalf, psychologist, best-selling author, TEDx speaker, and the bossy Jewish mom you didn't know you needed. Each week, you'll get no-nonsense, research-backed strategies served with humor and love, so you can stop second-guessing yourself and start having the relationships you deserve. You'll always leave knowing exactly what to say and do to shift your relationships for the better. So let's get to it. Well, here we are back to the podcast. If you're watching me on YouTube, I'm wearing like a fabulous shirt with like a leopard print or something, an animal print. It just seemed right when we're talking about dating and sex and brain chemistry. I don't know, you know. I try to dress for you a little bit. So YouTube folks have something. So the rest of you though are listening on the podcast going, what is she talking about? The brain chemistry of why love is blind. This is, you know, let me say this first. When I started writing this, I was kind of also writing about how, you know, later in a relationship, you sort of go like, well, they weren't like this when they first started dating and whatever. And they probably were. But again, love was blind in the beginning and you weren't noticing it. And later those things come in. So part of my therapy to go bundle today and what my One Love Collective will get, my online Substack community will get, I am going to talk about if you like, so this is really geared towards catching red flags early today, but it's also geared towards if you're in a relationship and now you're thinking, how did I not notice those things earlier? But you're in it and you're wondering if you should kind of stay or not. Like, is this a red flag? Is it not? So all of that is going to be here today. And some of that, again, is going to be in some of the kind of handouts for later, you know, what I offer. And I have a great free download today, which I'll talk about when we get there. Okay. So to really help you assess. But let's start with the brain chemistry of why love is blind. You know, falling in love isn't just a feeling. It is a full-blown neurological event. Your brain creates a potent chemical cocktail that makes the person in front of you look like perfection sometimes, even when they are not, okay? And that love drug cocktail includes a few things. One is dopamine. We've talked about this pleasure neurotransmitter before. It's what gets released when you eat chocolate, you know, win money, take certain drugs. And falling in love activates this same reward system in a massive way. And I've talked before about how this can be treated kind of like an addiction, which is why you might be obsessing about an ex or something like that. And I have a great, some great episodes on why you obsess over past relationships, and I'll link to those. Whenever I talk about the research or linking or anything, I mean that you can find it under the video if you're watching on YouTube, or you can find it on my website when you go to this episode. Everything, all the research, all the links, all the downloads, everything I talk about is there. And whenever I say research says or something like that, you can be assured that I'm going to give you a link for that. It's not just, you know, kind of talking. And I think that's what sets my listeners apart from other listeners of other podcasts is that you want to know that things are evidence-based. And if you want to go look yourself, you can. I do the work for you, but if you want to go down those rabbit holes I go down all the time, be my guest. So this dopamine really affects you in a massive way. Like I said, you feel euphoric, motivated, like kind of laser focused, you know, that laser focus you'll have, all that's that dopamine. There's also norepinephrine, which is a neurotransmitter that gives you energy, excitement, again, focus, and it also ramps up your heart rate and it'll make your palms sweaty. It's the reason you can stay up talking all night, even when you're usually dead tired by 9 p.m., you know, when you've just been like, oh my God, we spoke until sunrise. And you know, normally you're in your jammies at 7 p.m. Or is that just me? This is why. Also part of that chemical cocktail are oxytocin and vasopressin. And these are the bonding chemicals that make you feel close, make you feel trusting, connected. Oxytocin is released during physical touch, sex, famously in childbirth, of course, and in deep conversations. So yeah, I know. Serotonin is another one, you know, and another neurotransmitter that we talk about a lot when we're talking about the love cocktail. Now, strangely, serotonin levels drop during early stage romantic love. Okay. So isn't that, I know. Studies show this is similar to the serotonin levels seen in obsessive compulsive disorder, which explains why you can't stop thinking about the person, replaying every text, every smile, every moment. You know, that's kind of where that's coming in. So your judgment center literally shuts down. Okay. Functional MRI studies, they're out there, show that when you're in love, the part of your brain responsible for critical thinking, negative judgment, the prefrontal cortex deactivates. Your brain suppresses anything that might cause you to second guess the bond. It is evolution's way of helping you pair up for survival, even if that means ignoring some, we'll call them inconvenient truths in the beginning. I know. So these are all reasons why you ignore the red flags in the beginning, right? When people say love is blind, they're not wrong, okay? And so basically, other than that chemical cocktail that's going on, or because of that chemical cocktail that's going on, I'm going to say five big reasons your brain lets those red flags slide. Again, that I've seen in my 35 to 40 years of doing this. So I'm going to say first and foremost, your judgment center is offline. So the areas of your brain that are responsible for evaluating risks and assessing negative traits, again, are deactivated when you're falling in love, when you're really getting into someone. This means your brain physically, your brain cannot process certain negative information about this partner. I know, it's crazy, right? So what's an example of this? An example would be, you notice early on that they constantly interrupt people in conversations. And normally that would drive you nuts. But early on, you tell yourself, oh, they're just enthusiastic, because your brain is refusing to let that register as a flaw. I know. Crazy, right? Sit with that. I know. Number two is confirmation bias. It's in full swing. And we've talked about confirmation bias many times on the podcast. But, you know, you naturally seek out information that confirms your belief that this person, and in this case, that confirms your belief that this person is wonderful, and ignore anything that's going to contradict that. So your brain is filtering reality to maintain the illusion, okay? So an example of this would be, let's say, your best friend mentions that your partner seems a little controlling and you dismiss it immediately. Oh, they're just protective. They care a lot. You know, you're unconsciously searching for ways to prove to your friend, to prove them wrong, because your brain is focused on keeping the love train rolling. That's where your brain is. All right. Number three is the biological imperative to bond. So from an evolutionary perspective, we're wired to pair up for survival. So early humans who bonded were more likely to raise offspring successfully. They were more likely to survive harsh conditions. So your brain is designed to prioritize bonding over objectivity. So you might notice that I had this not long ago. I had a client who noticed that their partner, that this future man she wanted to be with, had never really held a steady job. And instead of seeing that as a potential problem, she was thinking, oh, they're just figuring out their passion. I love how free they are. Her brain was minimizing these real concerns because, again, pair bonding, it subconsciously feels like the highest priority. And it wasn't really until I started asking her and going into the history of him, because they've been dating about 2 months now, 3 months now, 3 months now. And I was at, you know, I kept, oh, what did he do for a living? Well, what did he do before? What did he do before that? And, you know, you said that was only 6 months and you said that was a year. Like what? And sure, like, so she, I was kind of sending her back to ask questions and she came back and he literally, this man had 5 jobs in 2 years. And I said, isn't that a little bit of a, and currently wasn't working. And, you know, he was saying like he was living, I don't know, I think he was living off some family money or I don't really know. He had saved, like she was very vague about all this. And she is someone who's like super into her job and really saves and is very careful with money. And I was like, these are big things to be overlooking because this will, you'll be homicidal, you know, a year from now, living with someone who is acting like this. You know, why are you acting like it's not a big deal? But, and this is a smart woman who's in therapy, who's doing all the things. So I don't want you to feel quote unquote dumb because you've been in that same situation, ignoring things. Cause again, that's why we're talking today. Reason number 4 is that dopamine is addictive. Literally, the dopamine rush you get from early love is as powerful as what someone feels when they're gambling or using cocaine. Again, I've talked about this before on the podcast. A lot of the research I talk about is from the beautiful, fabulous, my girl crush, Helen Fisher, biological anthropologist, amazing. You're chemically addicted to the high of being with this person. So that's happening. So you might overlook that they ghosted you for 2 days because the next dopamine hit is a text that says, oh, I miss you, right? So your brain is telling you, oh, the wait was worth it. You're chasing the chemical high instead of evaluating their reliability. Okay. Again, and all this stuff in the beginning, you're kind of explaining away, but later you're complaining about it. And you're even saying things like, I don't remember it being so bad, you know, before. And I got to tell you, from it probably was, but you didn't see it. Okay. And I really kind of talked about this in the last episode I did. So go back and listen if you haven't listened to that one. Number 5 is a scarcity mentality kicks in. This is one I see a lot. So if you believe this person is the one, your brain becomes highly invested in making it work. The scarcity mindset tricks you into thinking, I hear people say, oh, I'm never going to meet someone like this again. Oh, it took me so long to find this person. Like they are a friggin' unicorn that you're never, no one's a unicorn. I say with so much love in my heart, and that makes you double down on ignoring the red flags, right? So I had this recently. The woman, this is the other way, I have a man I'm working with. The woman mentioned that she didn't want kids. And this guy I'm working with absolutely does want kids. And instead of facing that incompatibility, he's talking to me about, well, she'll probably change her mind. You know, I think all women eventually want kids. She just, you know, she doesn't realize how safe it can be with me. But he was talking about all the reasons she said she didn't want kids. And a lot of it was kind of security reasons and other things. And he's like, I'm going to change her mind. And he was literally saying to me, this connection is just so rare. I don't want to give it up. And I think that we're going to come together later on those things. And I was just like, are you freaking kidding me? So, right? And that brings me to what I just alluded to. Do people change or do you? And here's the truth. Your partner probably didn't change. If you're listening and you're in a relationship and not single, your partner probably didn't change. Your brain did. So when that dopamine and norepinephrine calm down, that usually is between 6 months and 2 years. Okay. So I always tell people, don't get married before 2 years, because that's when that whole love high stops for sure. That's the outside of it. When those calm down, again, usually between 6 months and 2 years, your prefrontal cortex comes back online. Your judgment comes back on. Your critical thinking comes back on. Suddenly, the very things that seemed adorable, that were quirky or exciting, are now irritating, irresponsible, and selfish. So maybe early on, you were saying, oh, I love how laid back they are. Nothing stresses them out. And 10 months in, you're like, why do I always have to be the one to make the plans? They're so unreliable. This whole thing, I see it a lot. This kind of opposites attract thing in the beginning, you know. I think I've shared before with this wonderful couple. I've worked with three couples now with this combination where he is German and she's Brazilian. Isn't that funny? Is that a thing? Write in and let me know. But I have a couple now, and I've worked with two other couples like this. I mean, like from Germany, from Brazil. I don't mean like, you know, back in their family histories. And I will tell you that I kind of see why those folks really, right? So maybe let's say she's Brazilian and he's German, although that's not every couple. There's like this joie de vivre that you love, right? The German is in the Brazilian, and they're like, oh, you know, like c'est la vie and living in the day and carpe diem. And then the German, you know, is having the clocks run on time. And I know these are just incredibly big tropes and stereotypes, but I have to tell you, in every couple, they held true. And you know, and then the Brazilian likes the, I remember this one woman explaining her husband. She said, oh, he's like a still pond. It's so beautiful. He's always so reliable. He's so consistent. I just love it. I feel like there's this place I can land. And so in the beginning, there's all this, you know, there's great sex and there's fun and there's just this beautiful tension between the two that really works, where the one person is sort of, you know, making you feel more calm. The other person's, you know, in introducing you to new things and kind of pulling you out of your shell or whatever. And it seems great. That's that opposite attracts thing. But when you have a mortgage, when you're having kids, when you're deciding how to spend money, guess what? Those things start to annoy the crap out of you. And instead of enjoying them and thinking how quirky, cute, and wonderful they are, suddenly people are at each other's throats. I know you're probably listening right now going, holy crap, I'm not German and I'm not Brazilian, but I have the same thing. You know, it's pretty common. So, and I will say that it's not a sign that the relationship is doomed when, you know, this kind of all falls apart. It's just a sign that the infatuation phase is over and you're entering another phase, which again, Helen Fisher talks a lot about. So, and it's really more of a bonding phase and a love phase. And that's kind of the phase you have kids in and things like that. But again, you do, but I still say, if you can, not to get married in those first 2 years, if you're interested in marriage, or even maybe move in. I know I'm going to get some hate for that, but because you got to wait until some of the love goggles come off before really deciding if this is your person. Or I'll link to it. I did an episode a while ago, like the 10 things you should ask before moving in together or getting married. And, you know, at least look at that, you know, first and make sure that you're on the same page with all that stuff. So if you're anything like me, you're bad at asking for help, like weirdly bad at it. I've been a busy gal for a long time now. Kids, partner, my own business, all the things that make for a full life these days. And my instinct always was to just white knuckle it and do it all myself. But I say it on this show all the time. Ask for help. You don't have to do it all. And meanwhile, there I was doing it all. And I finally changed all that, from my podcast editor to the person who got 10 years of photos off my phone and into albums I actually look at. I found amazing people to help me on Upwork, and I've been using them for the last 8 years. And you don't need a business for any of this, any project, any size, planning an event, sorting out something at home, finally handling the thing on your list you keep avoiding. Upwork lets you find, hire, and pay expert freelancers all in one place.
With Business Plus, you can access the top 1% of talent on Upwork, and with AI-powered shortlisting, you'll get matched to the right freelancer in under 6 hours. No endless searching required. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to connect with top talent ready to help you and your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.
The question that comes to mind here, right, is are you falling out of love or are you kind of falling into reality? So you might think when you've been together a little bit, like, oh, we lost the spark. They're not who I thought they were. This must not be the right relationship, things like that. And the truth is, you know, you might not be falling out of love. You're falling, again, out of that infatuation and into reality. So you're transitioning from a dopamine-driven obsession to more of an oxytocin-driven attachment. And that's the biological blueprint of how long-term love works. You know, mature love doesn't come with constant fireworks. It comes with comfort and safety and connection, but only if you know really how to nurture that. Okay. So I just want to say that. But again, I do want you to look at there's certain red flags that you don't want to get in a long-term relationship around, right? You really want to see them for what they are, or at least problem solve for them earlier so that you're going in with, again, the love goggles off and more of your eyes wide open, right? You just want to be in clarity. That's really what I want, really, for everybody listening. So what do you do about it? Okay. How do you see the red flags before it's too late? That's really where I want to go now. Once you understand the brain chemicals at play, you know, the dopamine, the oxytocin, the serotonin, I think it's easier to stop blaming yourself or the other person for missing the red flags. I don't want you to, I get a lot of this with my clients. They're just like, how did I not see? I don't understand. And again, they often then blame the other person. Oh, they weren't this way when I met them. They didn't drink like this. They didn't, you know, whatever like this. They made better decisions. They were better with money. They had a job when I met them. Now they don't. But again, there are signs. I don't know what to say. There are flags because let's say someone who wasn't drinking alcoholically maybe when you met them, but you know, you realize a couple years in that they have a problem with alcohol. There was boundary problems up front. There were other issues that maybe weren't alcohol, but were things that would have given you a red flag, okay, about it. Or maybe they did have something like a DUI in the past, or maybe they did have a way that they just talked about drinking that, again, if you had keyed in, you would have noticed, but you were, again, with the love goggles, so you didn't, okay? So again, you weren't foolish. You're not stupid or foolish or anything. You were flooded with these chemicals. You were flooded. That's a better way to say it. But now that you know better, you know, it's really time to do better, right? And again, my free download for today's episode, I'm really trying to knock these out of the park with season 8, is a red flag reality check worksheet. It's to really help you decide, is this a red flag or is it not? You know, it's like a reality check. Okay. So it's a red flag reality check worksheet. Again, you can get that below the video. If you're watching on YouTube, like and subscribe. And if you're, you know, otherwise go to the website. Okay. To download that. And again, my One Love Collective gets it included in all their fabulous handouts Therapy to Go bundle for this episode. And I'll go over everything in the Therapy to Go bundle at the very end. So you don't have to listen if you're not interested. So I came up with like 7 ways to start seeing clearly or to help you see more clearly, even when your brain, you know, really wants to stay high on those, to stay high on that. Okay. Like I sat down, I was like, what are the things I tell my clients? What are the top things that, I look at, I talk about, and these are them. All right. So what order? Of course, I'm always like, what order? Okay. Number one, I would say is really to name it. Name the chemical cocktail. So acknowledge to yourself, hey, I'm in the chemical flood zone right now, right? It's not just infatuation. It's neurochemistry designed to keep you bonded long enough to pass on your genes. And knowing that gives you power. So when you feel obsessed or euphoric, name it as a brain state, not a soulmate sign. So sort of get out of the immaturity of it, I say with love, is what I'm telling you to do. There's a real immaturity that it is, you know, again, it's because that should tell you the problem right there. That should let you know that your brain is a little bit hijacked. It's sort of like if you drank and acted in some crazy way when you were drinking, wouldn't you think, oh God, that's because of the brain chemical, right? Because of drinking. That's what drinking does. It changes certain neurochemistry in your brain and it, right, which makes you feel a different way. It makes you, your judgment gets skewed, how you look at things is different, right? All of that changes, but you can name it. You can go, oh, it's drinking. And then you can say to yourself, well, I can drink less next time because I get into trouble when I drink so much, or I could make sure I'm in a safe situation when I'm drinking, you know, what, like, but you can talk about it. It's not, I don't think it's a shame based, but for some reason, love, because we seem so sober and we're like, this is my person, you know, and we seem so sober in the moment, but just be really clear, like my brain is getting hijacked. I have to treat it. This is not a soulmate sign. This is a brain state sign. Okay. And the more you're thinking that. So I give a mantra, like try saying, this feels amazing, but that doesn't mean it's healthy or that doesn't mean it's sustainable. So, you know, be real. It does feel amazing. It is wonderful. I don't want to be the Debbie Downer of the situation. I just want to be the Debbie realistic of the situation, the Abby realistic. Let's go there. Okay. Number two is you need to slow the hell down. Slow down. Slow your roll. If you want clarity, you need time. The faster things move, the less time you have to see reality. And that's not romance. It's rushing past red flags. So make it a rule to spend more time observing than imagining. I'm going to say that again. Make it a rule to spend more time observing than imagining. Okay. You're going to have to push yourself. This is mindfulness. Did you download my mindfulness starter kit yet? If you have not, what are you waiting for? You've got to get mindful. If you're at work and you're daydreaming about them, if you are constantly want to get on your phone and text or whatever, you've got to put in some breaks. Just like I would tell you, if you were thinking about smoking pot all day like that, I would tell you like, that's a problem. You need to step back, right? And I would tell you to put in some things so that you couldn't just smoke pot all day because you're thinking about it all day. Just because you're, when people tell me I couldn't help it, I really want to, I say with love, give you a little shake, okay? With a little loving mother Jewish shake. Like, come on. I mean, you can't help yourself. Of course you can. Of course you can. But you have to be aware. That's why I say acknowledge it first. You have to say what it is. You've got to put in some stopgaps sometimes. Sometimes that's leaving your phone in the car all day when you're at work so that you're not, you can't text them all day. Get yourself immersed in something else. Sometimes that means, you know, asking a friend to help you with that or blocking a phone number or whatever, you know, but you have to, you can't, I'm not accepting the victim-y. I just couldn't help it. Like you can, of course you can, but you need to want to and you need to focus on it. So I want you to ask yourself, do I like this person or do I like how I feel around them? I know. Do I like this person? And then again, you should be able to name it. Or do I like how I feel around them? And I asked a client this recently and she'd been on four dates with this gentleman. And she said, oh, no, I was like, okay, what do you like about him? And she said, well, he's so nice. And I said, what does that mean? He's so nice. What is that? What do you mean? She goes, well, he's nice. And I said, yeah, how do you know he's nice? What is he doing that says I'm so nice? She could not answer this. She goes, well, it's just this way he talks. And I'm like, what does he say? What is it? Does he give you lots of compliments? I said, is he nice or kind? And she was like, well, there's no difference. I said, no, there's a huge difference. Like what? You know what I mean? And she couldn't name these things. I'm telling you, when that happens, I just did the trauma bonding episode not long ago, right? You're in some scary territory here. Those are brain chemicals. If you can't name the thing, if you say he's nice and I say, well, what do you mean? And you go, well, I noticed that he was really kind with the waiter. And that, you know, he looked him in the waiter in the eye when we were ordering. I really liked that. He was asking me if I was safe getting home. He checked in, at, you know, to make sure I got home safe. He like, give me some examples, you know, of what that is. And how did he talk? He talked about, I liked how he talked about his relationship with his mom, or I really liked how he talked about his relationship with his ex-wife. You know, they're not together and he was able to articulate that, but he has a lot of, it's clear he has a lot of respect for her. He did not talk down about her at all. He wasn't like talking her up in a way I felt uncomfortable, but he was really very respectful. And you know, there you go. That's specific. That's specific. So you should be able to talk about that. Okay. Number three, and I've had clients do this, is I want you to create a red flag reflection practice. Okay. I make clients do, well, I don't make them, but I ask clients to do this who are in this space where they get caught up. I have a few clients who definitely get caught up in those early times and get carried away, which is one of the reasons they're seeing me. So once a week, really, sit down and ask yourself a few questions. And here's the questions I pulled a few from some homeworks I've given to clients. Did they dismiss or minimize anything I said this week? And you have to do some gut checks about that. Did I feel uncomfortable and brush it off at any point? In this last week, did I feel uncomfortable and brush it off? I have some clients who do this daily because after a week, they romanticize too much. So I have some clients who do this daily for a week. Okay, so you do it however it works for you. Was I rationalizing their behavior because I like them, right? So if you felt a twinge and they excused it, there's a cue to dig deeper. If they were late and they were making up excuses for why they were late or whatever, or everybody, you know, just no one should be late the first date. I would say that. I would say the first few dates for any reason whatsoever. I think you should take that. I mean, I shouldn't say for any reason. I'm sorry. Okay. Maybe. I would watch that closely. If you had someone who was late on a first date, I would watch that really closely and see how they are with other things. Was it really an aberration? Because that can happen. But then it should not even be, they should be early for every other date because they're so worried about, you know what I mean? Because they're thinking like, I'm not going to be late again. That is so not me. I'm going to make sure I'm really on time, right? That's what I want to see. But, you know, otherwise, what is that? What does that mean? Number four is get a second clear opinion. I really want you to talk to a trusted friend who isn't in the swoony phase with you, okay? Or it could be a therapist or someone else, but let them give you honest feedback, okay? Especially about anything that feels off. But remember, don't just ask for validation. Ask for their radar, okay? So you're going to say something like, you know, I wanted you to tell me if anything sounds weird, even if I don't want to hear it. If you had a gut about something and you just can't explain it, even that, I want to hear it. Now, if you're like, oh, but my friends are always jealous or whatever, then first of all, why do you have them as friends? Go back and listen to my friendship episode and do a little friendship audit. Second, that's not home. Then that's not a trusted friend. I'm saying a trusted person, someone who really does have your best interests at heart, someone who helps to look out for you, someone you can trust. And again, you might have to pay for that. I don't know, depending on where you are in your life. And that's okay too. There was a time in my life where I trusted no one except my therapist, except the person I paid, because I had such bad judgment for so many years with who I talked to and who I allowed in that I sort of needed to check it out a lot whenever I was making any decisions for a little while. I was pretty young, but I became a little bit dependent on her and her thoughts about things, but it really helped me. For a while, I had to like put my trust in someone else because I couldn't trust myself for a little bit until I learned those skills. Okay. Learned how to listen to my gut and follow that. Okay. Number five is look for the trust triad. Okay. I've talked a lot about what I call the trust triad. If this is your first time listening to me, then this is new, but I speak about it a lot. It's a good time to check in with yourself within this framework, okay? And because real trust is built on three things. What are the three things? If you've been with me, you know. Integrity, which is honesty. Is this person honest? Do they just say the truth? Are they transparent, not just honest? I'll say that too. Are they competent? Do they show up on time? Do they follow through on what they said they were going to do? Are they competent in the world? And goodwill, right? Or do they have my best interests at heart? Do they have my back? Do they act as a team? So you want to ask yourself, does this person do what they say they'll do? Is that showing up in how they're talking? Are they emotionally competent? Are they able to handle conflict? Are they able to talk things through? Do they generally have, again, my best interests at heart, or are they mainly focused on themselves? Like, how is this working? So if one part of the trust triad is shaky, you know, you got your red flag there. Any part of that can be a problem because all three of those make up trust. And it might be just one where it's shaky, but that's enough to have a red flag that you should be paying attention to. Okay. Because without trust, you're done. Without trust, there's no vulnerability. And without vulnerability, there's no emotional closeness. So end of. There's no more to say after that. Period. Stop. Full stop. So you have to have the trust, and you have to have it in all three ways. Okay. Because trust is not black and white. It's not one thing. So you might, as I've mentioned before, you might trust someone not to like cheat, but you might not trust them to be honest with their feelings or to have your back or something else. So it's really important to pay attention to all that. All right. Number six, I really want you to tune in to how they handle the word no. One of the clearest red flags is how someone reacts when they don't get what they want, when they don't get their way. Do they respect your boundaries? Do they guilt trip? Do they sulk? Do they push? People can fake kindness, but they generally can't fake respect when challenged. Okay, when they get challenged. So I think it's really smart to, and I don't want to test people, but make sure you're saying no to small things. And then that you really do want to say no to. Don't test them. Don't like, you know, videotape or something, but just make sure you're being honest and saying no to the things you want to say no to. But then make sure you're really watching their response. It'll tell you so much. And I have a really great example of this where I had a client, a woman who was on her fourth date with this gentleman that she was very into. They were meeting during the week because they were really, actually, I think this was there was a fourth or fifth date. So they were really excited. They're going to meet like on a Tuesday, but she had a very early flight on Wednesday, but she wanted to see him because she was going to be gone for 2 weeks. He was like, I really want to see you before you go. We've been really enjoying this, blah, blah. So she said, great. Can we meet early? And then because I need to get to bed early. So I need to leave early and I want to spend a couple hours. And he was like, sure. And then right before he said he couldn't make the 5 o'clock that they originally said, and they couldn't meet till 6:30. So already, to me, that was a big red flag. I wish she had just said, no, never mind, I can't do it then, because we're going to get a half hour together. I really don't want that, you know, or an hour, whatever. And because she really wanted to leave by 8. So that's why, like, meeting at 5, you know, you have a few hours together, like, to sit and to hang out. So now it's 6:30. So she's supposed to leave by 8. That's an hour and a half. Right? Can you even, like, that's really quick. But she wanted to see him. So now they meet and he starts pushing. He's like, you know, as it's getting closer and she's telling, like, I have to, and he's like, oh, we're rushing through the meal. It doesn't feel good. Can't you stay a little longer? Why don't you just stay till 9? Just till 9. Like, come on, like another hour. Do you see this? This is a problem. And he was couching it in, I just want to spend more time with you. We're having such a good time. I feel so, you know, bonded to you, connected, whatever. And she was head over heels for all that, right? All those love chemicals were going, all the love goggles were on. A person who has your best interest at heart would have said, first of all, would have shown up at 5 and made that happen or had canceled. That's number one. Number two, because it's a priority, you're going to be gone for a few weeks. Are you really a priority or not? So clearly his schedule took precedence over her needs. That's number one, by him saying, I can't be there till 6:30, which I also think he knew earlier than then, because he didn't plan it well. Two, then a person who is good with your boundaries would have been like, I know you have to leave. I want to make sure you get home because I care about you and you need to get to bed and you need good sleep, right? They would have been making sure she left on time, not pushing her to stay later. Now, by the way, I don't blame this guy. It's my client's issue that she kept moving her boundary, okay? By the way, she didn't end up leaving till 10. So now it's 10 o'clock. Again, she has to get up at like 4, all right? So she has to get home, get to sleep. You know, women, we got to take off our makeup and get ready for bed. It's already a bad thing, okay? Now she's calling an Uber and he's like, no, let me at least drive you home. And she's like, no, I'll just take a car service. I'd rather do that. And he's like, no, please let me take you home. Let me at least do that. Let me be a gentleman. And he's like, you know, I'm not an axe murderer, right? We've already been out 4 times. And again, he's pushing, but it seems so nice, right? It seems so wonderful. What a great guy. So she says, okay, again, boundary. Now he didn't come on time. Now he's moving the times when she's leaving and she's giving into it for hours. Okay. They're supposed to meet at 5, right? So she could leave at 8. Now she's leaving at 10. She's leaving 2 hours later than she wanted to as it is. So then he drives her home. They get there. She starts to get out of the car and, you know, a little kissy face there, but that's just nice. But then he says, oh my gosh, let me just walk you to the door. She's like, no, I'm fine. It's right there. He's like, no, come on. Let me walk you to the door. So he walks her to the door. Again, he's not listening. He's overriding everything she asks for and she's allowing it. So this is on her, not him. Gets to the door. Of course, what does he ask? He's like, you know what? Can I just come in and go to the bathroom? I'll just be 2 minutes. And again, nothing bad happened. I know this sounds like we're getting ready for some horrifying, you know, he chopped her up and dismembered her thing, but he did not. But he comes in and he wouldn't leave right away. He wanted to hang out. He's like, what if we have one final nightcap? And she had a really push to get him out. At this point, she's finally like, you have to go. Like, you have to go. And she had to get sort of stern about it. He finally leaves. Next day, so now it's like 11:30 or something before she actually gets to sleep. I mean, it just was not a good idea. But the next day he's texting her and now he starts to gaslight her. And he starts saying things like, you know, yeah, this is the trouble with women. You say you want to be close and then men try to have time with you. And then you don't even want to be close. I think you have an intimacy problem. He was literally saying this to her. You have an intimacy problem. And she was falling for it, just to be clear. Like, she's thinking, he's like, I think this is why you're single. You really might want to look at this. You mentioned you see a therapist. You probably want to talk about this in therapy. I was really trying, you know, I think we were having such a great time. It felt, I also realized now maybe you're a little anal. He was calling her, like, her boundaries were too, you know, thick and she's kind of anal about things and her timing and sleep. Like, you can sleep later. You know, you have the rest of your life to sleep. This is our time. I mean, to me, it's all gaslighting. She was falling for hook, line, and sinker. Needless to say, we had many therapy sessions about it. Needless to say, she, thank God, stopped seeing him. And it was very hard to stop with him. He was not accepting no for an answer. He kept calling. He kept texting. This happened probably, gosh, it was a long time ago now. But it was, and I said to her, he's going to still reach out to you in a couple months or in a month. And he sure did. Like, a couple more times, he was following her. I mean, she had to block him everywhere. This is someone right up front with a lot of red flags, but it looked so nice. He was I'm a gentleman. I want to walk you to the door. We're having so much fun. Why don't you want to spend more time with me? I'm trying to spend time with you. This is someone, there were so many red flags. He was not respecting her boundaries. And then was gaslighting her around having them to begin with. These are red flags. And this is the kind of man she'd been with many, many times. He looked different. He seemed different, but he was not different when you got right down to it. Okay. So these are the things I want you to see that often you don't notice are red flags, but if you check in with how you're feeling, you realize that you feel small, you feel pushed, you don't feel safe. I kept asking her, I said, do you really feel safe with this guy? And she said, well, it's not like he tried to rape me or something. That's literally what she said. I go, that's your definition of safe? At least he didn't try to rape me? Like, seriously? That's where we are? And, you know, she sort of looked at me. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, wait, like, that's the bar? He didn't try to chop me up. Yeah, like, I don't even know how to talk about that. Like, let's just be single the rest of our lives. What? So notice the flags when you don't feel good, when someone is pushing, when someone keeps getting, you know, when you say no, what do they do? When you, and so it's not just always no, it's also like when you say what you need, a great person for her would have heard what she needed, would have been there on time at 5 o'clock, and would have been pushing her out the door at 8. And he might have driven her home to spend more time with her and then been like, good night. He would have went to the bathroom before they left, which, by the way, I doubt this guy really had to go to the bathroom. You know what I mean? Like, so it's not like everything was wrong, but there was a lot wrong here and how this person acted. And again, how my client allowed him to behave. Remember, you're responsible for your boundaries, not the other person. All right. Number 7, keep a reality check journal. So again, this is kind of related to something else I already said, but get clear with writing stuff down. Every time you see a behavior that makes you pause, even if it's minor, you know, write it down so you remember. And then you can go back to that other tip I just gave, you know, so you have things already written and you'll see it. And then read back through the week. I have clients do this and then usually they bring it to me. Are you noticing a pattern? Because attraction can mask repetition. But your journal won't lie to you. I'll tell you that right now. That's what you'll see. So if you notice, a lot of like writing things down helps you later with any denial. So, and again, if you're in a relationship and starting to realize the red flags were always there, this isn't about blaming yourself or resenting the other person, you know, your partner. It's about owning your power going forward. You know, you didn't necessarily fall for the wrong person. I would say you just weren't equipped with this clarity at the time, and now you are, okay? So, and if you aren't in a relationship yet, then notice the red flags. Do not be desperate to be in something. Desperation is from fear, and fear never made a love relationship better, okay? I want you to see love with your eyes wide open. That's the goal. That's the goal of all this. And I think that's it. Okay. Yeah, I think I'll end there. Sometimes I think I have more to say and then I'm like, maybe that's enough. So I want you to download the Red Flag Reality Check worksheet. If this is an issue for you, if you're like, wow, this is something I don't notice or I get involved in or I get caught up, then I would definitely tell you to download that. Always with transparency, you'll be put on my Love Bites list. I send out a love letter twice a month for free. That's just that, just a love letter. I don't sell anything. I'm not trying to get you to do anything. You won't get 50 emails from me, but I am trying to help motivate you and help you think differently otherwise. So you will go on that list. And if you don't like to be on that list, when you download something from me, you can just unsubscribe. It's right at the top in big letters. So not a problem. All right. And if you're interested, if this all really felt like, wow, this is hitting me deep and hard, and this is something I really need to work on, then I would offer you to get the Therapy to Go bundle. Again, this is a bundle that comes included with my One Love Collective on Substack. So it comes included with, they get this for their $8 a month that they spend. Okay. So they spend $8 a month and they get all the things. This costs you $10 for just the one bundle. So it's up to you. You can do it or not, but let me tell you what's in the bundle. So you see if you're, cause you might not be interested in joining the One Love Collective. It's like, oh, it's too much. I don't want a recurring fee or whatever. That's fine. But it's $10 if you just buy the one. And here's what you will get. You will get 5 things to do when the spark fades, but you want love to last. So again, if you're in a relationship and you've noticed this and now you're like, is this okay? Am I all right? You'll get that. You'll also get conversation scripts for talking about the things that are driving you nuts. So again, scripts like say this, say that, right? For those. There's journaling prompts to help you stop ignoring red flags or find out if they're really red flags at all. Okay. 10 signs you're ignoring red flags and what to do about it. That's another one. There's the chemistry of love explained and how to hack it on purpose. So I just have like a little handout on all that. It's kind of like a, you know, like a quick sheet on all everything I talked about. And then there's the worksheet I call the dopamine trap versus real love. Like, where are you? It's a worksheet to help you sort of decide where you might be. Again, if everything I talked about today just feels like you, I the Therapy to Go bundle might be great. You can do it on your own. It's meant to be kind of your own therapy, or you can do it and take it and speak to your own therapist about it, you know, kind of go deeper and have some more things to talk about, whatever you decide. And if you want to join the One Love Collective, again, you get live Q&As with me, you get all kinds of stuff. So you do it or not do it, it's totally up to you. But we're having a lot of fun in our community. All right, that is it for this week. Thank you so, so much for being here with me. I just love our time together. It always means a lot. And keep the good ideas coming in, abby@abbymetcalf.com, or go to my website, go to the Let's Connect page. I love hearing your ideas or questions, you know, what we can do on a future episode. Remember, I do not give individual advice out, so please do not ask me for that. It's highly unethical, nor do I have the time. There's many thousands of you. I don't have the time for that. But if you have a great idea for a future episode, I'd be probably really excited to do it. All right. Mwah. Love you. Have an amazing week, and we'll talk real soon. Thank you for spending time with me today. If you're loving what you're learning here, come join my One Love Collective. It's my private community where we take these conversations even deeper. You'll get a ton of bonus content, live Q&As with me, guided visualizations, journaling prompts, scripts, and an incredible community of like-minded people ready to support you as you create more ease and joy in all your relationships. It's all waiting for you at abbymetcalf.com or right on Substack. I'll see you next week.